Psychiatric Survivor Pride Day, this is important to us because we have not only survived, that's what survived psychiatric abuse and oppression. That's what we mean by survivor.
If we are perceived to be different, so be it. We are different. We are all different.
We must all be committed to the values of acceptance,
self-determination, respect of individuality,
and strongly believe in the intrinsic worth and with pride and dignity for every human being.
In 1993, Toronto held its first Psychiatric Survivor Pride Day. This event was founded with the goal of celebrating individuals who went through and survived the psychiatric sector. In addition, the event also served as a conference to inform the public of an often hidden side of psychiatry and to have the voices of anti-psychiatry activists heard. This year in 2003, Psychiatric Survivor Pride Day once again took place, but with the coordination of an independent theater group called The Friendly Spike, a four-day event was held entitled Mad Pride Weekend. This event started on July the 11th and ended on the 14th.
This is a festival celebrated by psychiatric survivors and their allies and driven by the force of the psychiatric survivor movement. The definition of a psychiatric survivor is someone who has survived the abuse of psychiatry and psychiatric institutions. Psychiatric survivors, by and large, do not acknowledge the term mental illness. All people from time to time suffer emotional trauma. We all agree that the stigma of being labeled mentally ill is a devastating mark lasting a lifetime. The term itself is the stigma.
In a meeting room at City Hall, opening ceremonies took place, where survivors and activists gathered. One of the speakers was Ruth Ruth, a festival coordinator and co-founder of the Friendly Spike Theater Band.
Friendly Spike has been involved in the Psychiatric Survivor Pride Day celebration since it began in 1993, but not as the host. We've just sort of collaborated with the other groups and whatnot. But this year, the ball was in our court to kind of embrace it, and so we did. Now, in 1993, the psychiatric survivor community in Toronto began having a regular Pride event called Psychiatric Survivor Pride Day, and it was held on various days, not necessarily July 14th. However, in the year 2000, it aligned itself with the global MAD movement, which celebrates on July 14th, Bastille Day. So this was a great opportunity for our theater company that works with marginalized and disadvantaged communities to make a grassroots festival called Mad Pride Weekend and also Psychiatric Survivor Pride Day.
And now the whole of France is becoming increasingly restless. From the 19th century historian.
So what's so special about July the 14th, and how does it relate to Psychiatric Survivor Pride Day? Well, July 14th, Bastille Day, is a French symbol of the end of the monarchy and the beginning of the First Republic. It's a day that stands for freedom and struggle against oppression. In the 1700s, the Bastille was a building that served as both an armory and a prison in France. To many of France's citizens, however, the Bastille was a symbol of the absolute oppression of the ancient regime. On July 14th, 1789, one of the most monumental events of the French Revolution took place. The Bastille was stormed by the people of France, who then proceeded to take the building down. Dr. Bonnie Burstow is a senior lecturer at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Adult Education.
So what date Psychiatric Survivor Pride Day is? It is July 14th, and that is not an unimportant date in the history of the world. It is indeed a date that stands for freedom. This is the day of the storming of the Bastille. And Psychiatric Survivor Day, Pride Day, that is not just a bunch of us getting together and being happy and proud, though certainly that's part of it, but it's saying something about freedom. Just as people in France, a while back, centuries ago, fought and to liberate and began with the most oppressive institution, the Bastille, and freed the prisoners, so many of us here today have been fighting and will continue to fight against the psycho prisons.
The term psycho prison is a name often given to psychiatric institutions by many survivors and activists. This is because many feel that these places are oppressive prisons more than anything else, places where human rights don't exist. Psychiatric survivor and anti-psychiatry activist, Don Weitz has been active in human rights struggles for many years. He talks about his experience as a psychiatric patient.
And getting me committed to McLean Hospital, which was, it still exists, that's a psycho prison, what I call a psycho prison, but it's a teaching hospital associated with Harvard Medical School. And I was tortured with insulin subcoma shock treatment. I had 110 shock treatments in 6 weeks, which that's a hell of a lot. I'm very fortunate I'm alive. I went into a coma once when I wasn't warned about, just as people today are not warned about the many serious effects of electroshock. Insulin shock is no longer given. It was never outlawed, but electroshock is more so-called efficient. And according to the shrinks who like to damage people's brains, it's more efficient. So since that time, I went underground, so to speak. I kept my mouth shut because I was too ashamed, I guess, of what happened to me. And then about 15 years later, I started to break my silence. I was in the 70s. And since 1972, I've been speaking out against the psychiatric system here in Canada and the United States.
Don Weitz's experience as a psychiatric patient is a commonly told story by many survivors. Nevertheless, within the walls of psychiatric institutions, psychiatric abuses are often kept out of the public. Tormented patients are unseen and undefended. At 2466 Dundas Street West, the Friendly Spike held a workshop performance. Entitled A Common Cause, the performance was a play in progress based on the experience of a man named Mel Starkman. In 1992, Mel Starkman almost died from neuroleptic malignant syndrome, a disease created by psychiatry and the excessive administration of drugs. Mel was incarcerated at Queen Street Mental Health Center because, in the opinion of a psychiatrist, he couldn't manage outside. Mel's friend, Don Weitz, applied for a review board hearing to change Mel's status from involuntary to voluntary patient. The play is based on this review board hearing.
Welcome to Friendly Spike Theater Band's reality theater series, A Common Cause. First, we're going to let some latecomers in. Do you want to come in? There's seats up here.
All right, let's begin. I'm a conniver.
Yes,
chair. I think I'm the conniver.
Yes, of course.
Is your name Dr. Dubin?
Yes.
And you're a psychiatrist qualified to practice in Ontario. Are you employed by Queen Street Mental Health Center? In what capacity?
I'm a staff psychiatrist.
Are you currently the treating or attending physician of Myron?
Yes.
How long have you been Myron's physician?
Well, I've known Myron.
Security, Unit 4, missing hospital jacket.
I've known Myron for about 7 years. I've been a psychiatrist since 1984.
After the play, I had a chance to speak with Mel Starkman. He discussed the genesis of the play, as well as his experience as a psychiatric patient.
Well, let me tell you the genesis of the play itself. We had a poetry night. I don't remember exactly what it was called, but we were reading poetry back and forth, and I had to stand up and be the MC that evening. And I don't know what behooved me that night. I said to the audience, I want to pay a tribute to my friend Don, who got me out of Queen Street. And I started to describe, just ad hoc, what had happened to me in Queen Street, and the review board. And I started to explain to people that he tried to get a review board for me a long time ago, and some of the circumstances which will come out in the further development of this play. And and Ruth came up to me afterwards. And I say, you know, one of these days, Ruth, I'm going to write a play. I don't know what I'm going to write it on. You've got a play there, Mel! So, you know, we've been developing it. It started, and I remember very distinctly, my incarceration started back in 1966 when I first went into Branson Hospital. But I was in and out and in and out. And finally, in 1981... I was active with the anti-psychiatric survivor movement. I was very active in the city. And, well, frankly, I got burnt out. And when I went into hospital, I went into Queen Street. And instead of getting relief for my situation, it tended to get worse because they threw every drug at me. And to a certain extent,
many survivors and activists believe that the practice of psychiatry within psychiatric institutions should be scrutinized to a high degree. In the past, with the advent of psychiatry, treatments for psychiatric patients included bloodletting and the removal of teeth and bodily organs. Treatments were highly experimental, while the science behind them was questionable. More recently, however, treatments such as electroshock, lobotomy, insulin coma therapy, and neuroleptic drugs have been invented. And with them, there's a similar questionability to the medical and scientific reasonings and responsibilities behind these treatments. For example, the psychiatric and pharmaceutical sector often express that psychiatric patients have a chemical imbalance within their brains. As such, practices like the use of neuroleptic drugs are said to restore this chemical imbalance. Nonetheless, some argue that these drugs affect the brain in a different way, that these drugs are made to deliberately damage higher functions of the brain in order to suppress so-called mental illnesses.
I was taking a number of pills at the time, including Prozac, which I took over a period of months, and I went into a suicidal state eventually, and I didn't, you know, I felt suicidal, but given the protection of the environment, they were watching me so closely, and I was in seclusion, and I was tied, you know, when Don...
Mel Starkman's neuroleptic malignant syndrome was partly created by a practice known as polypharmacy, the administration of two or more drugs at the same time. Despite this practice being highly dangerous, however, many say that it's common within the psychiatric sector.
You asked me about, sorry. Well, that basically is a fancy term for when a doctor gives you two or more drugs at the same time, prescribes them. Well, in medical school, I never went to medical school, but doctors aren't supposed to give, particularly in the psychiatric system, two or more drugs simultaneously. Oh, except they say, well, I have to give one to counteract the bad effects of the other. They call that an anti-Parkinsonian drug, because Parkinson's disease is a very common effect of the neuroleptics, so otherwise called antipsychotics, which don't combat so-called psychosis. So the point is, they really want to control you as nothing. This is not ethical medicine. I'll tell you why it's not ethical. Because if you prescribe two or three more drugs, you don't know what the interaction, very often you don't know how they interact. You know, it's like they don't tell you that. They should not be prescribing two, three, four drugs. That's what happened to my good friend Mel. This is what's happening as we speak. Hardly anybody gets only two drugs, which is on the low side. I wish I could tell you how many people I've known who tell me they tick off five, six, seven drugs in one damn day. Can you believe it?
I don't understand why Myron's wandering around or hitting his head as considered psychotic or schizophrenic. Aren't you further stigmatizing him by throwing these damnable labels at him, which you cannot define?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that Myron has an illness. I think he says so himself. I think he asks for medication.
Doctor, what is there a diagnostic test for schizoaffective psychosis?
Not really.
No. In fact, there is not, and never was, a diagnostic test for schizoaffective psychosis, schizophrenia, or any other so-called mental illness listed in the DSM. Right. Is there a test, yes or no?
No. No. Psychiatric assessments. We observe the patient's behavior, yes, and we use our own clinical judgment.
I bet you do careful examination. Isn't it a fact that clinical psychiatric judgment is very, very subjective? Like you're making it all up, for God's sake. And it's often wrong.
Well, sometimes.
No. Almost all of the time. And I'm telling you that psychiatric diagnosis is unreliable, unscientific, and stigmatizing. In fact, there's no such thing as mental illness, for God's sake.
Oh, I don't know.
Another thing that many find wrong with the current psychiatric model is how individuals are diagnosed with so-called mental illnesses. For many of these illnesses, there is no diagnostic test. Thus, patients are diagnosed on a very subjective level. And in turn, patients are treated on a very subjective level with mind-altering practices. If one is classified as mentally ill because they are different from the norm, then one must ask, what is normal when it comes to the mind? Is there a norm? If not, then how can abnormalities be defined?
About almost 20 years after I got out, until I started to clear my head, I was so brainwashed into the medical model. You know, everything's an illness. If you're not feeling too good, you know, if you're feeling low or high, it's an illness. You know, if you act weird, it's strange. You know, it's an illness. No, but it took me many years until I discovered for myself that, you know, this is a huge sham that the psychiatrists are perpetuating, a fraud, and that we have to free ourselves from psychiatry. Absolutely. Psychiatry doesn't do anybody any good. It just is a social control system. Has nothing to do with healing, nothing to do with alternatives, nothing to do with human rights, just the opposite. So I want everybody to know that. And so when we try to provide, you know, when we celebrate ourselves like today on July 14th, when we build self-help groups and advocacy groups, there's a very strong reason why we're doing it. Yes. Because our rights have been taken from us and we want to get them back. But above all, our very lives.
Right.
Forced incarceration, labeling, drugs, electroshock, loss of identity, humiliation techniques, loss of freedom. Now, surviving injuries like this, and these are no minor injuries, these are major assaults on the integrity of the human being. Surviving injuries like this, now that's something to celebrate.
This recording was made on July 11th through 14th, 2003, and produced from July to August, 2003. For more information on the Friendly Spike Theater Band, you can email them at friendlyspike@globalserve.net.